Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Hey, man, what's your name?
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. Good morning to you, Sam. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. I told you Wisconsin's a trickster. I'm not so happy with this white stuff.
Well, it's here. And it was really heavy water content. So who that goomer?
Just the typical Sandy, I suppose.
He said, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I came with the snow.
Yeah. You know, man, I, Easter morning, it was 39 degrees. And on Christmas morning, it was 48.
Is that, I didn't, that's an interesting.
Yeah, a dynamic or dichotomy. 48 degrees on Christmas.
Yeah.
And 39 degrees.
Well, I know it was cold when I was hiding eggs yesterday.
Yeah. the snow wasn't there. That's right.
No snow. A little windy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crisp. I think that's what we call it. In spring days, when it gets like this, you call it crisp.
Well, you know, on Easter's, you can't, you know, you expect it. It could be anything, right? I mean, historically, as far as the weather is concerned, I remember as a young boy, 40 degrees, wet, cold. Easter's not always, you know, where you can wear your Easter bonnet, right? Not always that way.
No, I noticed you wore your Easter bonnet this morning. The Flying W.
You know, Sandy, as I was, spent yesterday cooking, so I cooked the whole day. And I know you're a great cook, but you didn't know that I'm.
No,
I fancy myself.
Well, I don't think I'm a great cook, but I suspect you.
I know you're a great cook. I've had your cuisine.
Ah.
I did a little thing called deep frying of a turkey.
Yeah.
You ever had one of those?
Well, I've done it a couple of times. I didn't know what to do with all the peanut oil at the end of it, so that was a mess.
Well, you can save it.
And there's some really good videos of people doing it.
I've only seen those videos, Sandy, of the horrifying
fires.
Yes.
That's
explosions, basically.
Well, that's because they're still doing it the archaic way.
Ah.
There are electric fryers.
Oh.
That you think peanut oil burns above 375 degrees. You get any higher than that, it's going to burn. So when you used to do it outside with the propane tanks, you couldn't control the temperature. And if the wind blew, because you couldn't do it inside, it would shoot the temperature up too high, and you know, it was hit or miss with whether or not you would burn it up. So, you know, maybe 5-7 years ago, Butterball came up with the electric fryers. And so you fry inside your home.
Oh.
And since the electricity won't go any higher than 375 degrees, I mean, it won't allow the cooker to go any higher. You don't have to stand there and watch it. You basically just plug it in, and the peanut oil will never rise above the 375.
It sounds like someone's famous last words.
So
you don't have to stand there and watch it.
No, you can't burn it.
Famous last words.
You can't burn it. Yeah. So it's almost even a fool like me could do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought about it, and I said, well, I don't want to get outside. It's too cold to do anything outside. And generally, I don't do much in the way of frying turkeys until Thanksgiving or around that time. But I just wanted to do it on yesterday, and pretty good. 4 minutes a pound. And, I had a 15-pound turkey, 1 hour, and it's done.
Yeah, I just have seen the videos of the jet-propelled turkey. Turkey got lifted.
Well, you know, that's because, again, the people are still doing it the archaic way.
Yeah.
And I do mine a little special. You know, I inject it with fresh basil, butter, orange juice, seasoning, spices. You inject it all throughout the bird. And so it's just so moist all the way through it, the white meat and all of that. So anyway, that's, you know, did a little bit of that on yesterday. And then all the other side. So I wasn't worth much of anything else after that. Got up early in the morning, took this frozen turkey out of the freezer.
Did you look for the eggs that weren't there?
No, but you get, you've got all this stuff planned, right, the night before.
Uh-huh.
And so I took the turkey out of the freezer, thawed it out 2 days. It's been in the freezer for a while. And I looked at what it looked like, and it looked like it had been in, involved in some kind of nuclear warfare.
Oh.
You know, you don't know sometimes how long those turkeys have been frozen.
Yeah.
You know, because there is no regulation.
So what do you mean? Like it was tattered?
Well, you could see the skin on it was so horrible, hideous looking. And then, you know, there should have been blood there.
Oh, God, Earl.
I know. But
it's breakfast time.
But there's no blood because it's brown.
Oh.
And that tells you this has been there for a long time.
So is this the turkey you cooked?
No, come on.
Okay.
So I went out and... what's the name of the place out in Menominee Falls? Whitman's had fresh turkey.
Ah.
You know, aren't many places are going to carry a fresh turkey during Easter. There's not a lot of calls.
So you didn't go out in the yard and lay in wait for a wild turkey to
no,
come from?
Not
that's
quite.
That's a fresh turkey.
Yeah.
I've got wild turkeys in my yard. I could have called you over.
Well, but the fresh turkeys
are
the ones, too, that have never been frozen.
Right.
So you know, they do have some that they haven't frozen. But anyway, where do I want to go? Did you see? How about those Bucks?
Well, they eked one out. I didn't watch the game, but I look at the box score and checked out all the statistics, and it looked like they were a cold, cold team yesterday.
You want to talk about cold teams?
Yeah.
I want to talk about some cold-hearted people. Here we are in Madison. You know, we got some cold-hearted legislators.
Uh-huh.
Listen to this. They wanted to, many Republicans want to cut unemployment benefits because they don't feel that people should be entitled to unemployment benefits, which you earned. Unemployment benefits you earn by working.
Well, these are the unemployment benefits you get when you get laid off.
Yes.
Or fired. Yeah.
So those aren't what's the word I'm looking for? Handouts. You've earned that. You know, if you don't work, you don't get unemployment benefits.
Right.
So, but the Republicans.
Well, and if you quit, you don't get unemployment benefits.
That's correct.
Benefits. You only get
only
them
when
if
you get laid off.
Laid off. Yeah.
So Republicans want to cut those. Sandy, to force people to go to work.
Yeah.
Now, I always say, to me, why would you do that? Because I remember, during my youth, I worked for a company that, depending on whether there was a recession or not, Sandy, then we would be laid off. So you knew you were coming back. Because the recessions in the 70s and in the 80s didn't mean that the jobs were gone. It was a slowdown in the economy.
Yeah.
And so we would, you know, be entitled to those unemployment benefits. You knew you were coming back to work. But now they're going to force people who may be making more money and they get laid off to then turn around and take a job paying less money than what you get for the unemployment benefits. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I think what does make sense is people taking jobs if they're available and good jobs.
Well, the caveat is good jobs.
Well, yeah. And, you know, in Germany, for instance, that person who got laid off would go into an unemployment benefit period with training.
Right.
So they would be trained for the new job that would be another good paying job. So, you know, we have this caveat emptor problem. You know, it's, you know, if you're working in the labor force, whatever happens to you, and there's no safety net to speak of. And I guess they're talking about removing yet another safety net. And it's kind of hard to figure out why. I mean, if it's because we have deficits, there's another way to cure deficits, which is to take more money from the people who are making lots of money, rather than trying to figure out ways to cut corners with the people who aren't making money. You know, you mentioned before the show that they're trying to cut food stamp money in some states, which is kind of incomprehensible. Food stamps are a directed program to food, right? So
right.
People who get food stamps, number one, have to qualify based on the basis of need, and two, the type of support they're getting is pretty much restricted to using for food. And we're in a period of higher food prices, but this is what happens when we have a strong we have an economy that's pretty strong. No unemployment, but we have big deficits still. And so now the government's trying to figure, well, how do we cut deficits? And they're looking at cutting programs, safety net programs, instead of taxing people who are making lots of money in the strong economy.
Well, in this instance, what they are saying is, we've got all these companies that need workers,
mm-hmm.
and so... You know, we need to connect you to the job. Well, in this instance, it said currently an individual can receive up to $370 in weekly state unemployment benefits for 26 weeks. But whoever that person is making $60,000 a year if they're going to get $370 a week in unemployment benefits. To make that guy now go and work on a job that pays $12, $14 an hour, I think is, come on. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and presumably the unemployment benefits were designed to tide you through until
26 weeks.
Until you could find another job or get yourself trained or get yourself relocated.
All right, we got to go to break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams is here. I'm glad he's here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789 in Texas at that same number. It's Monday, so that means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I'm still looking out here, man. Can you believe we're looking at, you know, the snow-covered vegetation?
Yeah.
I know it won't be that long because the average right now is about 54 degrees in the city and in the state. So in the city, so I think we're going to be getting that for about 5 or 6 or 7 days in a row, man, or above
the 54, 55.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You're not trusting that, huh?
The average temperature. There's this so-called bell curve with standard deviations around it, and what percentage. Yeah, the Wisconsin bell curve for temperatures is not shaped very well.
Yeah. I want to get back to something we talked about a minute ago, and that's scale back food stamp benefits, even as prices soar. Republican states have really at the forefront of this month by month. More of the roughly 40 million Americans who get help buying groceries through federal food stamps. 40 million people. That's really not that large a number when there were 340 million people.
Yeah, it's a little more than 10%.
Yeah.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I think it's a large number if you think about a country that claims we're this center of prosperity. And I think it's an indication of the degree to which we do have poverty in this country, since qualifying for food stamps puts you pretty well down on the subsistence level. And I think it's pretty clear that there are lots of parts of the country where people who are very poor don't even get access to food stamps. They're just outside the organizational realm where you get food stamps. And what worries me about this is we're headed in our economy's headed in the direction of higher inflation. And food prices going up in the near term based on, you know, the prognosis for world food prices as the result of Ukraine and Russia's markets shutting down. I was reading over the weekend that Ukraine, at least, and Russia account for the wheat and food for 400 million people in the world. And so while it's not the people who live in this part of the world, the world food prices are affected all across the
globally.
World. So if there's a shortage of food in Africa and in the Mideast and in the Eurasian area, there's going to be a shortage of food throughout the world. And so food prices are going to go up dramatically. So is this the time to cut food stamps? I doubt it. Secondly, we've got an economy that's currently in the process, all the financial words looking at it, and over the weekend, the results in the financial markets in the United States suggested that we have a very precarious economy.
You know, Sandy, if people really knew the truth about this, the payments to low-income individuals and families dropping as governors in COVID-19 disaster declarations. You look and you see here's a list of the states. Iowa, Wyoming, Kentucky, Arkansas, Florida, Idaho, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Tennessee. And some of those are the poorest states.
Yeah, very poor states. Pink and red states.
Yes.
All of them.
So their people, for the most part, many of those people are already suffering in those states. And now you do this. And political stunts.
What interests me is why the political world always feels that what to do in a time of financial crunch for the economy to save money or at least make the budget balance better is to cut costs. Here, what have we done in the United States? During the boom time of the Trump administration, we cut taxes. And during the squeeze times when people are really suffering, we cut programs. Now, you'd think we would do it just the opposite.
Right.
And you'd think that during boom times, we could look at maintaining the revenue stream and looking at our costs and figuring out where we can balance the budget in a more appropriate fashion. And during the squeeze times, you would think that we would talk somewhere, financially responsible people would talk about raising taxes. But do we ever talk about that?
So
we don't even talk about that during war. I think the Vietnamese War was the first war the United States ever waged without raising taxes to finance the war. Now, it's just what we do. We spend money like it's going out of style during wartime, and we don't go through any special process of raising money to finance it. We simply dip deeper into the deficit.
You know, there's this talk about guaranteed income, maybe, and it worked a little bit with the Build Back Better plan, where people got the extra $300 a month, and it really did help people. And then you look at Joe Biden's plan and what he was talking about. There's no question that it kind of helped people until it ended. And now it's ended at a time when people are going to need that the most.
Well, my view is that building infrastructure is not, this notion
I don't mean
of building,
to build an infrastructure.
I know, but building social infrastructure
right.
Is not really done, I don't think, by handing money to lots of people. I think it's done by creating the programs that support the social infrastructure. So when we wanted to have child credits, we were doing that so there would be better child daycare and early and preschool schooling. Well, what we should do is have more preschool schooling and have a publicly offered child daycare. If we do that, like that, this is the way they do it in European countries. The money is, what you're spending it for. You know how it's going to be spent. You don't have to tisk-tisk about having a handout program for people who aren't working or whether they're working. It's there and available to make sure that everyone's birthright in this country is as equal as possible. And so I think all of this gets around to a backward way of thinking. We're unwilling to build the programmatic social infrastructure that supports a healthy populace and a populace where everyone's born with something like an equal birthright. And instead, we quibble about whether we're going to hand money out or not, or how much we're going to take away from people.
And really, though, Sandy, when you look at the overall budget, what they're talking about here is peanuts.
Well, certainly peanuts, yeah, compared to the way they squander money in many other ways.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday, so that's Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I'm always, I'm a member of this special class. There's always, these conversations in the state about the black population and why we're dealing. I just got through hearing the conversation about the census tract and now when it comes to the voting and all those different things based on where the special class of people, the minority blacks, are in the state, and we can't get this right because all the blacks are in one part of the state. And you just, man, for once, can we just, do some stuff that's right?
I don't know. I mean, when you think about what America spends all of its time talking about now, we're talking about the color of people's skin.
Right.
We're talking about their sexual orientations. What are we talking about? We're talking about all this. We've got people who are hungry. We've got an economy that's getting more and more warped, with the haves becoming a much smaller number and the have-nots increasing in size. We've got a socially untenable trend going. And what are we talking about? But the color of people's skins, the churches that they go to, and their sexual orientations. Our founding fathers would, based on the concepts they had in mind when they were talking about, and the founders of our churches who were worried about tolerance, would look at what Americans do and they would shake their heads. Like, these people, this is supposed to be the pillar of democracy, the pillar of society in the world. We're like the Greeks, supposedly. And yet we focus on all the wrong things.
Yeah, it just... it's almost like we turned back the clock, and a lot of that stuff started with Donald Trump. It may have always been there, but he came in and he just, hey, it's okay.
Well, tribalism, I think, exists within all of us. It's part of our DNA, right?
Yes.
DNA probably prefers to be with people who look just like our DNA, because that's what DNA wants. We want to, but society is all about overcoming that sort of human nature and bringing people together to create ever stronger and more more successful societal groupings. And now what we're doing is we're just fanning the flames of tribalism. And we talk about all the things that create tribes, religion, things that make us alike or different.
You know, Sandy, my fear is there are not enough conversations about it. Like what we're talking about right now, there aren't enough people willing to talk about that openly. And the fact that there aren't enough of who used to say the good people. I don't know who used to say I forgot the person many years or decades ago used to talk about the good
people. Decides who the good people are.
I know. So, but there aren't enough people who are willing to even broach the conversation.
Right.
And that's where the real issue is, you know, because I know people have to see that. You can't tell me you don't see what is happening in the society. And it just doesn't bode well for the future of the society. Right. You know, short term right now, people may feel good about that, you know,
why do people feel good about talking about what's wrong with other people or how to categorize other people compartmentalize them.
Sandy, if that's what religion is supposed to be about, right? Religion is supposed to steer us away from that. And supposed to be, well, I was going to say supposed to be inclusive, but religion has never been inclusive. But you think that would be something that you would say, we're all human beings. And even though there's tribalism, in the end, we're only here for a short period of time. And then we're gone, poof, we're gone. So, you know, why not? You know, who was this say, can't we just get along, Rodney King? Why can't we just get along? Yeah. I mean, it sounds, you know, simplistic, but it certainly would be beneficial as a nation to get that done. And I'm wondering, you travel the world, the other nations as divided we are in our own country?
The other nations, most of them are quite tribal in their makeup, right?
Right. So, but they're all the same.
They're fairly homogeneous. So, yeah. You know, I mean, I sing the praises of Norway, but one thing about Norway is they're basically all Norwegian. Now right. Norway has embraced other parts of the world and has many immigrants. You know, there is a significant African-Norwegian population.
Right.
But it's a distinct minority.
Right. But I
think that our culture, particularly the American culture, which is based upon inclusiveness, right? I mean, immigrants make America, and we've suddenly decided that we have enough.
Yeah, I know.
It's like the person who decides they have enough friends. I got all the friends I need. Sorry, I'd like to meet you, say hello, and everything, but I'm good. And now that's sort of the way we're handling immigrants. It's like we're good. We have enough.
Sandy, sometimes I forget that America is unique. There is no other nation like it. You know, you go to Germany, the Germans. You go to France, the French people are there. You go to Ireland, the Irish are there. You go to Poland, the Polish are there. You go to Africa, the Africans are there.
What a coincidence, every place.
Yeah, but you come to America and the whole human family is here.
Yes.
Maybe that's what is at the root of it.
Well, I mean, this occurs like in the countries that the Soviet Union had sort of the same melting pot, except that they lived in the republics, and I think at that point they tried to mix the people. And there are places that are somewhat more of a melting pot, but
than America?
No.
Oh, okay.
But like America,
right?
But America is by far the most extreme example of the melting pot, a country that's made up of all different peoples from all different cultures, and people who are apparently assimilated. But we seem to want to turn the clock back to the time when America was comprised of a melting pot that was made up of those people from Northern Europe.
Right. So, but you hear, you know, and you say, well, I'm an American. And, okay, so you say, well, what is that? Well, an American is not a nationality, right?
No.
And so when people say, well, I'm an American, and I'm like, hey, everybody here is an American, right? Let's stop acting like that somebody.
Well, that's what worries me about this whole patriotism litmus, because I think what's happening is that this country is trying to, some people are trying to figure out who are real Americans.
I know. That's what right. The problem.
You might call yourself an American, but let's figure out if you're a real American.
I know.
And how you become a real American is different depending on who's talking about it and who's thinking
about
it.
Well, it's not
people who talk about real Americans coming from the Judeo-Christian culture
right.
have just cut out of who are real Americans a whole bunch of Americans.
But when you say that, they don't understand. Reason for us saying that we are this melting pot and that we are unlike anyone else, and we're the great America, and we're proud of all of those things. No, we're not. We're not proud of those things because we want to separate it. You know, and I don't know, Sandy, I know it's not based on political affiliation. I don't think it's totally based on political affiliation.
This tribalism? Well, I don't think it's based on it entirely, but I think some parties are appealing to it more than other parties.
Right.
Okay? And so, I think that politics is playing games with it, and I think that particularly the conservative right is the one that is
right.
most worried about how America's changing and America's losing the thread of the American culture that makes America America. And people who talk like that are talking about trying to get people out of the club that don't belong in the club.
But what gets me, Sandy, is if they act as though those of us who aren't in the club don't see that and understand it. You know what I mean? I mean, I see that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So I'm not in that club, but that doesn't make me an American. You know, again, that's not what's on the Statue of Liberty. You talk about the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and all of those things that our nation is so proud of, don't they understand every time they look at this from a tribalistic standpoint, all of those things that we hold so dear yeah. are being destroyed?
Well, last week we were talking about tolerance and religion, but if you look at the fundamental founding fathers' view of what America was built based on completely on tolerance. We tolerate people with different ideas. We tolerate people from different countries. We tolerate people of different races and different religions. That's tolerance. That's
right.
And we would tolerate people based on presumably different sexual orientations. But what are we talking about these days except trying to differentiate in America between all of those various things? And we spend so much time on it that we can't seem to spend time on building the underpinnings for an America that would have, for instance, instead of the 38th worst child poverty level, we would have the best child poverty level. And instead of having healthcare issues that aren't as up to par for many developed countries in the world, we try to have the best. We would be out there figuring out how do we make America better, rather than how do we pare down this club so it can look like it used to look.
So make it better or make it great again, which, Sandy, it is the frustration that I have with it. Got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number as Monday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Monday. It means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, we're talking about this, and we'll finish this up. Republicans are dusting off a tried and true election strategy, hate mongering, which is what you've been talking about. Everything is, you know, we've got to bring everything together. Male voters have been drifting right in record numbers, and Republicans are taking a viciously homophobic and sexist and racist tack to appeal to them. And so I get it, you know. You talked about this many times, you and I, in the past. People are struggling who haven't struggled, and they don't know who to blame it on. And they really can't see that, you know, a lot of this, as you stated long ago, Sandy, is that our nation is just not going to go back to where it was economically, where we lead the nation and the world and everything. That's just never going to happen again. And people don't know how to deal with that. You know, hey, I used to be able to, you know, work at the paper mill.
Well, in fact, you know, one of the things...
Paper mill's not coming back.
Right. One of the things that's ironic is that we supposedly have a very hot economy, very low unemployment. Everyone's employed. Supposedly everyone's sharing in the economy, but that's not the case.
No.
You know, we have a top tier of the economy, maybe the top 10 or 15% portion of the economy is soaring, doing swimmingly well. But everyone else, if you went out and took a survey and said, are you living more prosperously now, or are you financially secure, or are you financially worried? I think we'd find out that a significant percentage of our country is living in a state of financial insecurity. And it's that insecurity that drives a lot of these social trends in terms of, the worried and scared people are the ones who want things to get back to where they were. They want society to get back to something where they felt more in control,
right,
more comfortable. And it has to do with this loss of the middle class. It has to do with the loss of all these rural jobs, the jobs that were keeping rural white America quite prosperous.
Yeah. And keeping their towns afloat.
Right. So, you know, we're fooling ourselves by thinking that the current economy is prospering and that the country at large is prospering, because that's not the case. If it were the case, I think we'd find that people would be migrating in a different direction politically and psychologically and sociologically. The direction we're migrating in now is the direction that a scared, worried, insecure populace moves, which is in the direction of divisiveness, in the direction of in nostalgia, going back to what was when it was better than it is now. That's what nostalgia is all about. I want to get back to yesterday, yeah, when it was better than it is today. You know.
Well, but see, as you well know, we're never going back there.
Well,
you know, I mean. You know, the horse and buggy left a long time ago, and the automobile came, and so you're not going back to the horse and buggy.
Well, what we're not going back to is the monopoly on prosperity that we had when World War II ended, and all the countries of the world that had been just decimated by the war. We're trying to recover. We had a 25 to 30 year honeymoon dating from 1945 to 1975, in which everyone else was still recovering, and we came out of World War II totally intact. You know, all we had to do was throw away our ration books and convert our manufacturing back from military manufacturing to domestic manufacturing, and we had an economy that was able, was undamaged, and was in a position of controlling the world.
So, Sandy, how do we then, because this has to happen, our society has to understand that this is the real world now.
Well, that's the problem. See, that's what I've talked about last week too. Is this patriotism litmus? Patriotism is a leap of faith that we're asking everyone to take, and that patriotism requires that people enunciate regularly the fact that America is the greatest place in the world, that we are the greatest opportunity in the world, that people here live better than people live any place else in the world, that we need to export to the rest of the world the kind of government we have here because it's so excellent. We don't allow self-examination. We don't permit a national self-examination because that's undemocratic. So instead of performing self-examination like a Six Sigma corporation, a corporation dedicated to continual improvement through Six Sigma would carry out, in which we figure out where we're good and where we're weak and how we can make ourselves better and how we can evaluate best in class around the world for everything. We don't do that. And the fact that I'm talking about it like that and people out there are scratching their heads. When have we ever had a discussion of whether there are healthcare programs in the rest of the world that we ought to emulate, or we have child daycare, or all of these things? We really don't reach out other than broadly saying, well, the rest of the developed world has healthcare for everyone, and then we just sort of ignore it and say, yeah, but we don't need it. You know, we've got the greatest country in the world. We have the greatest healthcare system in the world, which incidentally, we might have the most sophisticated healthcare available in the world. But if you measured healthcare by who it's available to and who it reaches, we don't come anywhere close to
it. But Sandy, the answer to what you are talking about, the way we are addressing it is buy more munitions, arm more of the American people. I mean, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yes. Make sure that guns are available to all Americans, and let's export guns.
Let's, all over the world.
Let's worry about our defense expenditures as the first priority of everything we do, and let's be willing to expand our defense expenditures even when we're contracting food stamps, which is incidentally.
Right.
What we are just talking about today, because even the Biden administration is talking about expanding military expenditures, while at the same time, we've got, you listed about 14 states who were deciding to curtail food stamps. Isn't that an interesting triage, a financial triage? And it tells me that we just aren't doing a self-evaluation that is based on the welfare of the people.
So based on what you're saying, Sandy, if I'm looking in the crystal ball at our nation and where it is, I don't see upswings. I don't see where we're all of a sudden going to fix these things because, again, we're not even having a discussion about it.
Well, my fear is that you said it during the break, I think, are these things going to get fixed overnight? My concern is that there might be an overnight change, but it would be the result of the trends that we're currently seeing, which is that we have a further division between the haves and the have-nots. So there's a steeper difference between those who are wealthy and those who are not. The 1% have a growing percentage of the national wealth, and everyone else has a shrinking percentage. And so we have a greater division between haves and have-nots, and we have, like I said moments ago, we have an economy that's very hot, but we have, if we took a survey, we'd find out that there are still many, many people in our economy who are financially insecure, and we have a great deal of social tension that's being created by this increased tribalism and this decision that we want to go backwards rather than forward and inclusiveness, and we have 400 million weapons in the hands of people,
right,
many of them who could well be angry folk, and quite frankly, even though there are many in the world, in the country, who would like to think that weapons are primarily held by criminals in the inner city, the kind of weapons that could raise havoc in our country are primarily held not in that area, but they're held by whites throughout the country who are carrying military-grade weapons and have, in fact, during periods of terrorism in this country,
all right,
have used those weapons.
Got to go to break. 844-967-2789. Tune into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back.